Hey, mister, can I get a, bowl of macaroni and cheese and, tater tots and, cheese pizza, but no cheese. I don't like the cheese. And, a plain hamburger and, French fries and a Diet Coke. Cause I see my mom drink it. And we absorb bad habits from our parents.
That made me wildly uncomfortable.
This is a hot dog is a sandwich.
Ketchup is a smoothie.
Yeah, I put ice in my cereal, so what?
That makes no sense.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
What?
Hey, mister!
Welcome to our podcast, A Hot Dog is a Sandwich, the show we break down the world's biggest food debates. I'm your host, Josh Scherr.
And I'm your host, Nicole Anaiti.
And I sort of identify as a 215-pound, 34-year-old toddler in that way.
In what way?
Not in the way that I want to eat, but in the way that I'm just really looking for someone to take care of me.
Naturally,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I want to be swaddled and I want to be loved.
The mother wound.
And I really, yeah, truly.
But you know what's the good news?
What's that?
This tattoo makes your arm look massive, like complimentary.
Which one?
The tomato vine around your arm, it makes your arm look like 30% larger. And doesn't that
That's
help,
pretty cool.
Doesn't that help cover your mother wound a
little? Oh, boy. I thought having big biceps would cover the mother wound. Boy, did it not. Can I tell you a new term that I learned in a book about the Food Network?
I don't know
if we've talked
terms.
About this.
I love new terms.
Great book about the Food Network that I just finished reading by Alan Salkin called From Scratch.
Okay.
Crazy long oral history. It involves, like, Julia Child when she showed up. I guess the original Food Network headquarters were by, let's say, like a track with the working gals, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And Julia Child used to, like, show up with, like, croissants and give them to
For the girls?
Give them to the girls.
Wow!
And then there was, like, let's say, a manager of these working gals
okay.
who would always, like, threaten to, like, hey, I'm gonna steal your best gal, talking about Julia Child to the Food Network executive producers. Wild stories. But anyways, turns out, in, like, the 2000s, they did this big survey on Food Network watchers
mm-hmm.
to find out who they are. And they mm-hmm. mostly predicted that it would be women-dominated, and that was part of it. But then they found a pocket of, like, you know, dude bros that loved watching Emerald Live.
Mm-hmm.
And then they found a pocket of, like, specifically young men
mm-hmm.
who would watch the Food Network to try and heal that mother wound because they felt nurtured while watching it.
Oh, my goodness.
And that is exactly me. And you know what? There's an executive producer that coined the term edible complex, as in Oedipal complex,
oh.
but with food.
And that's
and
you.
And boy, was that me to a T.
Wow.
So, yeah, I was, like, part of a very hyper-specific, keyed-in demographic of Food Network watchers. Like,
and
they were tracking my, like, watching Rachel Ray and Sandra Lee and Giada just trying to feel an ounce of a mother's love.
But look at you now.
And look at me now. And now the edible complex watchers have grown up.
And they're making their own content.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Wild.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're here to talk about kids' meals.
Kids' meals.
And why I think when you go to a restaurant, the kid menu and the kid meal concept should just be erased.
Yeah.
I find it to be doing a net negative in the United States of America.
Yes.
I find just giving kids the options of some sort of potato, typically fried or mashed, a protein, typically a chicken tender or a burger, and some sort of Italian-adjacent food like a pizza or a pasta.
Yeah.
I find that to be really limiting for children. Because right now, I am learning how to feed my daughter, right? So
how old is Eve, like?
She's eight and a half months at the moment. She's 8.5 months right
now.
She's
cool yet?
She's so cool. She's awesome. I should just strap her on and just do the podcast.
Bring her in, man.
She wouldn't say anything. She would just watch us and, like, be very observant. But no, like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, again, whenever I was being raised, like, we were told that rice cereal was very important whenever we were growing up. Like, that was the main thing that should be our main food is rice cereal.
Wait. You're saying we isn't, like, both of us?
I mean, that's what, like, pediatricians would recommend.
Is really?
Starting with rice cereal.
Oh, interesting.
Starting with rice cereal was kind of the norm.
Yeah.
But now we are now in the world of baby-led weaning. Now, what that means is you're giving your kids straight up pieces of food that they hold in their hand and put to their mouth.
Baby-led weaning.
Yeah, BLW for short.
What is BLW
entail?
So you put literal large pieces of food in front of your child of different kinds. It could be anything from a cooked carrot or a celery stalk or a piece of chicken thigh. And your child has
to... How many teeth does Eve have?
She has three right now.
She has... Aww.
But the idea is that they self-feed themselves, or you load a spoon with, like, let's just say, like avocado or yogurt, and they learn through much trial and error to feed themselves. You know, they teach themselves, like, this is something that will nourish me. I will put it to my mouth and I will feed myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you introduce different things, like different kinds of flavors and foods and textures and flavors. No salt, though. You can't give a baby salt.
Don't give baby salt.
So it's just I've learned the way to how to feed a child now for about 2.5 months. And it's been very difficult, but also very, very interesting, because whenever I look at what I'm feeding her three times a day versus what kids' menus for older kids, like toddlers, it's a world of difference, because I'm introducing so many new things to her that I want those new flavors and those new textures. I want that to funnel throughout the rest of her life.
Yeah.
But whenever I see a kids' menu, it stops, because it's all these boring beige white foods that aren't they're just not very nourishing.
And even when you say white.
Well, I live in America. Yeah, it's my food.
Yeah, it's my food. But like, it is, right? It's unseasoned. It's chicken tenders. It's macaroni and cheese and pizza and pasta. You know, Italian, but it's, you know, really.
They funneled through enough to be buttered noodles and flatbread. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's food that is predominantly like starch, fat, salt, and like cheese driven.
There might be like a pity broccoli. You know what I mean? There might be an asparagus, maybe.
Maybe some apple slices that are served as like a side thing. Like that's what McDonald's did back in the day a sort of like tax write-off.
Sure.
To be like, look, we're not just poisoning the youth of America.
There's milk.
There's milk and there's apple slices here.
Yeah.
I know you and I have talked a lot about like the wishes for when we have children to raise these Epicurean wanderers
I'm
of the
trying.
World.
I'm really trying. You should see
I know.
What I'm feeding
I believe
this girl.
You. I guess my biggest fear also... A larger figure other than my kid, eventual kid, hopefully, like not being an Epicurean and only wanting to eat mac and cheese, is the larger fear that I will do everything that I think is right and ultimately fail and my kid just sucks.
Well, yeah, there's a you lot of I mean? That. There's a lot of that fear. I don't want my kid to suck.
No, I have like cousins who like, you know, like kids just suck, dude. Parents did everything they could. They read all the books. They did all the things. They put them in all the extracurriculars. They paid for the schools.
Right.
Boom, suck.
Right.
You're not cousins, not my cousins. I know cousins. You know, I know people.
When's the last time you sat at a table with a child and ate, like, at a restaurant? Have you ever done that before?
I'm sure at some point, but, like...
You don't remember the last time you
no,
did it?
No, it would have been. I mean, I would have probably been a child. I don't know that I've sat with a child at a restaurant in my adult life.
Okay.
That's crazy.
Wow, that's crazy. It's really interesting the way that they... Like, the parent can either be, like, all in and say... What are you eating? Like, have some of the food off of my plate. Eat like we're eating off of everyone's plates. You're trying new things, whatever. And then there are some parents that are so strict. They're like, you're eating this one thing and it's something off the kids' menu and this is the only thing you're going to eat.
Why? Do they do that?
I think it's because there's like a weird control that comes with it.
Oh.
Like they just want to be hyper-controlling of what's on their kids' plate. And maybe the parents themselves aren't the most adventurous either. Maybe they're afraid of, I don't know, choking in a public place.
How much control do you really think you have as a parent? That's
right
the question
now,
that I am scared
right
of.
Now, because she's not very mobile.
Yeah.
A fair amount.
And then as she gets older and you have less and less control, that always seems to be a big sticking point for parents.
I'm very comfortable with the idea of my control being relinquished and allowing my daughter to be whoever she is and figure things out. She can't touch the kitty cat food bowl, though. That's a big no. I literally have to say no.
Wait, because she's trying to eat the cat food?
She's trying to touch it. I don't know if she's eating it. She just can't touch. So I say no. Yeah, and she understands that. And that's awesome. But everything else, I'm pretty like lenient and understanding. Especially with like food is one major thing. Like I let her make an absolute mess all the time. it's my house is in a state of disarray. But I'm telling myself, like, this is a good method for her to learn how to eat and be comfortable with touching food.
Are you getting this from books, or is this coming from your own brain?
I've read a little bit.
You're reading books?
I mean, like, I listen to audiobooks about baby-led weaning. I've had friends kind of show me how to do it. My parents were like, no, you just have to give her, like, what's it called? Like, mashed foods and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I did that for like a month because I was terrified of her choking.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's absolutely terrifying. The thought of this girl picking up a piece of carrot and just gnawing on it because she has only gums. But after a while, once you have confidence, like that confidence filters through to your kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And like when they see you eating a food, like literally sometimes David and I sit on the floor of our kitchen and eat like our breakfast like this, like with our forks and our spoons. And we do it very exaggerated to show her like spoon goes in fork and then it goes in mouth. And then we do it again and again. And then she kind of starts learning.
Wow.
It's really interesting. They're like little pieces of clay. They're just molding, but you have to do your part too. You can't just shove a spoon in their mouth all the time.
Sure, because then you're a force that's molding them, but then you go to a Chili's or a Friendly's or whatever the place that have kids' menus are. And then there's the forces molding them that are like, hey, you're a child. You should be just only eating mac and cheese. And then they taste chicken nuggets and mac and cheese and they go, oh my God.
Right.
I am biologically predisposed.
Of course.
I don't know that there's anything tastier in the world than just like a processed chicken nugget, man.
I was
did it.
Dude, after dance class, my mom would take us all to McDonald's and we would all get Happy Meals. It was incredible. It was great. I can still remember.
I used to dip it in straight honey. I used to dip their chicken nuggets into straight honey,
so
not
Kardashian.
Honey mustard, just honey.
Kim Kardashian does that too.
Oh my God. How could you beat that? How could a parent compete with that, and their offer is natural curiosity about the world in gourmet sabzi.
Look, a lot of us have tried learning another language before, but knowing a few phrases isn't the same as a real conversation. Es verdad. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. I've always wanted to learn Italian to travel, but generic apps just don't stick.
Rosetta Stone, the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, just launched Rosetta Stone Sapphire, a new app that combines its proven immersion method with the latest innovation in technology to help you learn faster, personalize your lessons, and have more fun along the way. Sapphire isn't one size fits all. It lets you focus on what you actually want to talk about, like food or family.
And that's all I want to talk about, really. They also have new chat missions to practice real-life conversations in a safe, interactive setting, giving you instant feedback so learning feels like a game. It's way more personalized and useful for real life.
If you want to try to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. A Hot Dog is a Sandwich listeners can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. You'll get unlimited access to all 25 Rosetta Stone languages plus all the new Sapphire learning tools. Visit rosettastone.com/hotdog to redeem 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/hotdog and start learning a language for real. Well, what can we do? Well, the thing is about, for me, it's like, how do you stop that predisposed nature of wanting to eat fat and salt and fried foods?
I actually don't know. And that's about to be like a huge question that we're going to have to ask as a society, which I know we already have been in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But literally, like, how we...
Is it like elimination? Like, it doesn't exist? Is that like extinction? Like, it's not something that exists. I'm not going to show it to you.
But I think that's like the classic, if you forbid anything, right, it's just going to make people want it more.
Exactly.
I don't know. I'm a big fan. Like, what I do with myself is I think the fact that you can just you can get hamburger and french fries delivered to your house.
Oh, my God.
If you want it within, like, 20 minutes, right? And it's expensive as hell now. But, like, if you're willing to just click a couple buttons and forego that ends up costing like 25 damn bucks to get a combo meal.
More, I feel. Oh, from a fast food place?
Yeah. But for me, a big thing that I instill in myself and would want to instill in a kid is like, hey, these foods are delicious and they're fun and they're awesome and they're meaningful and there's a beautiful history and culture behind them. Let's make them ourselves, man. Let's take a damn day. Like, nothing comes easy, I think,
so
is the thing.
Yeah.
Because I the other day. I have a meat grinder at home, and part of me overuses it because Julia said that I'd never use it. And so now I'm kind of just like, all
right. You're overcompensating for the purchase?
But also I love using it.
Is it a handheld meat grinder?
No,
or is it automatic?
It's not automatic. Okay, but cool. I think it's actually the same one that we have in the Mythical Kitchen.
Okay, cool.
I should have gotten a handheld one. It's so much cuter.
I know.
One of the old-timey stainless steel
ones.
Yeah,
my mom's asked me for one for like 10 years. I'm like, okay, I'll get it for you.
But like, if I want a burger, like I buy chuck roast and I cube it up. And it also tastes so much better.
Yeah.
Fresh ground, like coarse ground chuck in a burger. God damn it. That is a delightful food.
Yeah, totally.
And you don't have to make it gourmet, but it's like, I want to make the thing taste like fast food. Did it with fries. You know how to make a good fast food fry, especially if you use, there's an old video that we made where we did this method where
the Wendy's fries?
No, I was going to say where you put the fries in the cold oil.
Yeah, the Wendy's method.
What? Wendy's?
You called it the Wendy's method.
Did I?
I'm pretty sure if we look back at the thumbnail, it's literally a picture of the skin on fries with a Wendy's logo on the front. Look it up. While Josh is looking that up, when's the last time you liked a YouTube video? How about you like this video if you're watching on YouTube? It would honestly make us really, really happy. Don't forget to like. What are you doing?
What, did you just decide to say that?
No, I'm supposed to say that.
Nice, dude.
It's part of my job to say
that. No, I get that. We're talking about life-changing French fries hack. Did it change your life? Did our video from 6 years ago, life-changing French fries hack, change your life?
Josh.
Comment yes.
Why did I feel like there was a Wendy's logo on that?
It probably is.
Did you say the Wendy's method?
I don't think I ever said that because Wendy's also doesn't cook their fries like this.
Well, is it because I think that it's the Wendy's method?
Our videos back then were, this was 7 minutes. God, I was so thin. I was too thin. I think in these videos.
You were so cute back then.
I was very thin. And then I think I gained 15 pounds after this. So I was like, I don't recognize myself
anymore.
Josh,
you were such a little cutie.
I've really aged. I've really gotten worse.
Aged.
I know.
Well, you haven't gotten worse. You just aged a little bit.
The lines are here. And I have,
sweetie,
I have
just
tattoos
do Discord.
Everywhere.
Do what I do.
I don't know. I'm pretty into the idea of aging naturally. Mm. You know, I mean, I got a BBL last year, but. You never see my ass because I'm sitting down.
Yeah, you never see
my ass.
I'm
walking around just a dump truck ass around this office.
Josh Thicky. Sure. But like we were saying, I find children's menus at establishments like Chili's and Friendly's and whatever to be very limiting. And I feel like they don't allow kids to explore things while their menus have like 14 different kinds of burgers with like 18 different kinds of toppings.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, why? And I know kids are picky, but they're as picky. Also, I'm saying this as a mother to an 8.5-month-old. I have no idea what's in store for me or what kind of kid she's going to be whenever she's 2 or 3 and actually vocal and telling me what she wants and what she doesn't want. But I feel like right now I'm trying to map a good relationship with food because I want that for her and also for myself.
I had a French teacher in high school who would constantly say that, in France, the kid menu do not exist. The children just eat whatever the parents do.
Well,
I don't know if that's actually true, if that still holds up, or if it's just from Madame Keith.
Well, I listened to the audiobook Bringing Up Bébé, which is all about parenting the French way. And they talk
about that in
the book. It's like, kids aren't supposed to take over your life. They're supposed to be an addition to your life. You bring them into your life. You don't create a world for them. Like the idea of a Disney resort, like a Disney cruise.
I have a lot of thoughts.
Any French parent would literally be disgusted with the idea of the parents going on a Disney cruise.
I'm an American and I'm disgusted with the Disney cruise. So,
but it's just a foreign concept to create this life for your kid when in reality you need to allow the kid to be a part of your life. So I think that has a lot to do with why I think kids' menus at large are just BS.
I was talking to my sister-in-law last night and she was talking about how she used to order off the kids' menu till she was 15, 16 at Outback and get the kids mac and cheese because she just wanted.
Is it a small portion?
Mac and cheese. And that's kind of, it's a smaller portion, but also I think that was the only way you get, I think it was the largest portion of mac and cheese, the only reasonable entree of mac and cheese, but she just wanted to eat mac and cheese. That was her comfort food, but she didn't grow up with parents that valued other experiences. And then she started dating my brother, and you kind of got to be down with new food experiences.
Right,
and
now very
she's,
true.
A big foodie and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if there's a unique relationship in America to that kind of comfort food and to not trying new things. I don't know.
I find comfort food to be a very American thing.
Yeah.
The concept of comfort food, like something warm, hearty, sticks to your ribs food, is something very American. Because I feel...
Surely other cultures have comfort food, though, if you ask,
but the
like...
the concept of comfort food, like, this is a food that's going to make me comfortable.
In America, it's kind of just, like, bad for you, right? Comfort food is kind of associated...
Well, sometimes it's stew. Sometimes it's, like, a beef stew. Beef stew isn't bad. Or chili is a comfort food.
Sure.
I don't consider those things to be bad. Or chicken soup. I find the concept of this food is a food for comfort is something truly American, when kind of in the culinary canon of other cultures, it's just a part of the food that we eat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We draw a lot of weird lines.
Okay,
so even in the way that America treats, we're diving into a lot of anthropological things.
I'm having a lot of fun.
I'm having a lot of fun, dude. Neither of us are very qualified academically. But
I took one anthropology class in community college. And it was great. Had a lot of fun.
It's just us talking through our own thoughts. And
podcasts are about
talking.
Deal
with it. Deal with it. We're not swinging elections. We're just talking about culture. we should swing some elections. So let's jump into the mayoral election.
I don't want to.
What?
So I don't want to swing anything, especially not an election.
You don't want to get, who's he married to?
Who?
Heidi Montag?
Spencer Pratt? Why the f would we talk about Spencer Pratt? What a dork.
Anyways, Google the LA mayoral race. It's getting wacky out here. Everything's getting wacky out here.
If you've been on more than two reality shows, you should not run for any sort of office. And I firmly believe.
What's the guy's name? Tom Sandoval. I'll get Tom Sandoval for mayor. I'm in.
Tom Sandoval for city controller.
Run the budget.
Lisa Vanderpump for U.S. Treasurer.
What are we talking about? Comfort food. Talking about comfort food.
I find it to be truly like comfort food is an American ideology.
We draw a lot of weird lines around food
and
in America
food
in general.
Is French fries, mac and cheese, chicken tenders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We put. It reminds me of that phrase that Mary Nessel said of like, never has such an unhealthy society been so obsessed with health. Like, we draw so many weird lines around food of like, this is food for kids, this is food for comfort, this is food for diet, this is food for performance, this is...
Just food.
Whereas so little of our food is... It's so little of our food is directly tied to culture in a certain way, right? So few of our foods are... directly tied to any idea of ancestral lineage,
mm-hmm.
which is what makes like the hamburger so unique, right? That it's like, it's this thing that was invented within the last 100 years, really, if you look at the idea of a hamburger sandwich, mm-hmm. you know, you trace it back to the Hamburg steaks it has nothing to do with it, right?
In Germany, right?
The first recipe, I think, was in Delmonico's in New York, in America. But anyways, like, it's such a unique American invention. And it's just the fact that it's eaten on the go, and it's quick, and it's infinitely customizable, and it's taken over the world, and it's fatty, and it's, you know,
mm-hmm.
all these things. And it just spread like wildfire. But it's something that's divorced from any sort of like ancestral lineage of mm-hmm. like how to eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And I think those concepts are how we sort of get in this like, we're in this floating ether space where we're so susceptible to advertising because of it. Kids' cuisine. You grew up with kids' cuisine?
My mother would not allow that in my house.
We couldn't afford to get kids' cuisine. For people that don't know, it is a TV dinner, so microwavable, and of like the lowest of the low quality. It's you know, it's all of their things. If you get a lean cuisine or something, at least, you know, that might have a Tuscan chicken, penne pasta, some vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Kids' cuisine is like exclusively like chicken nuggets, crinkle cut french fries, a little microwavable brownie, and like some corn is the healthiest you'd get in there.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to all the other ones, except they had cartoon penguins.
Love the cartoon penguin.
They had a cast of characters on mm-hmm. it. Maybe it came with like a design or a toy, or there was a maze on the back. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also like, you know, 30 cents more expensive, and we were just poor as shit, so we could never afford it from that angle.
Right.
That's all I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the food is like utter, like disgusting.
Of course. It's
wet and it's salty and it's fatty.
The corn goes into the pudding of the brownie pudding goes into the corn.
You know, but it's like it's these little marketing things that, you know, you kids' meal might come with a
maze on the back. Crayons.
I mean,
we give kids menus so they can play with it and they can interact with it. And then they're so used to seeing these like five options.
McDonald's, I mean, built playgrounds.
Yeah. I used to
That's unique. That's American. That's crazy, dude.
That's crazy. Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, like, I think that's a very American notion of how children should eat and interact with the world, especially as it relates to food.
It's very limiting.
It's very limiting.
That's my problem with it. It's very limiting, and it's very bland, and it's very expected. And how do you expect to grow your mind and your susceptibility to adventure and different things and new experiences when all you're eating is beige, crispy beige, yeah, crunchy beige, soft beige?
I mean, you know why?
In the Matrix?
No, I was going to say, like, the reason the beige foods exist is because they're the most profitable.
Yeah, so, of course. There's also that.
So, like, the idea of chicken tenders, right? The tenderloin is literally a part of, it's like attached to the breast.
Part, yeah.
It's attached to the breast, but it's not. And you'll literally, if you fabricate your own chicken, sometimes you'll get tenderloins that can kind of stay on the breast, mm-hmm, and some are just kind of loosely hanging. And
with the little hangy bit, yeah.
The little hangy bit. And so chicken industry basically was like, hey, we can just nix this little piece off of every chicken breast and create a new market. And, like, what's the best way to do this? This is around the time when all the large chicken manufacturers, so Tyson, that, mm-hmm, you probably know from Tyson Anytizers, they're awesome. Tyson is, I believe, the first or second biggest chicken farming operation in America.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're an industrial mega farm,
mm-hmm,
right? But we know them as their, like, fun little Anytizers. That's because they found out that the more you process a food, the more the profit margins go up. If you're selling whole chickens, you can only sell that for a certain dollar amount.
People aren't fabricating chickens in their own house.
No. So yeah, in 19, I think it was before World War II, all chickens, 98% of chickens are sold whole,
mm,
in stores. People, mm-hmm, that was part of home economics and part of running a house is you would buy a whole chicken, you'd turn it into soup, you turn it into five different dishes, whatever. That was it, right?
Yeah.
And you know, people would pluck in whatever. And then grocery stores, mega grocery stores came out. People started fabricating the chickens down. So then they were sold in parts.
Mm-hmm.
And then now over 50% of chickens are just sold directly into processing. You know what I mean? And it's because Tyson found out that, hey, if we also owned the factories that made the chicken nuggets, we could just make more money.
Right.
So that's how it happens. So we end up with this, like, giant glut of processed chicken products. And who better to eat it and create a lifelong addiction to it than kids?
So true.
You know what I mean? And so we're dealing with a lot of this kind of, like, rootless, and that's not to say every American is rootless in terms of food. There are wonderful, like, heritage foods,
sure,
in America, but there were also very unique efforts to try and create a rootless American food system in a way.
In order to create a person who is addicted to easily ultra-processed foods.
In a way. In the early 1900s, looking at, like, the work of Ellen Swallow Richards, who tried to create the first school lunch program,
mm,
did a lot of really great work as a social reformer. But there was this kind of idea that they needed to create a uniquely American, which is to say white Anglo-Saxon Protestant version, mm-hmm, of American food identity,
mm,
through the school lunch system. And so, mm, they, like, wouldn't let Italian, you know, Italians eat pasta in schools and stuff like that. It was this kind of interesting way of, like, divorcing
so
people from their ancestral foods to try and make, you know, the melting pot of America come true. And I think she had pretty good intentions doing it. It's tough to really parse out through the lens of modern morality.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it was, like, you know, beans and cornmeal and oysters and things that are indigenous,
sure,
to America in a way.
Sure.
But then that got chopped and screwed over time.
Mm.
So,
brutal.
I don't know. A lot of interesting factors.
Right. Right.
You know?
So, what are you going to do?
Huh?
What are you going to do?
I remember TGI Fridays had a kids menu dish that I used to order.
What was it called?
It was called a pizzadilla.
Mm.
And it was a pepperoni quesadilla with marinara sauce. And I think that's what we can all get behind.
You know what I used to get?
What's that?
I used to go to Cheesecake Factory. I would get a small french fry and a small kids cheese pizza, and I would put the french fries on the pizza as a topping.
Shit, maybe kids' menus rule. Have we thought about that?
But hey, man, look at that.
French fry pizza.
You're creative as hell, right? Always had it in me.
As a young adult, finding the right path to your future can feel overwhelming. It starts with YearUp United's tuition-free job training program, Career Pathways. If you're without a bachelor's degree, but you have a high school diploma or a GED, you can get skills first training to succeed in the industries you're passionate about, all while earning a weekly educational stipend to offset basic expenses.
From there, you'll have access to internships and hands-on experiences with Fortune 500 companies. And with Europe United's job placement services and personalized coaching and mentorship, you can put your knowledge, skills, and most importantly, confidence into practice.
So apply to Europe United today and take the first step towards achieving the career you want. Visit yearup.org to learn more.
All right, Nicole, we've heard what you and I have to say. And now it is time to find out what other wacky ideas are out there in the universe. It's time for a little segment we call
Opinions Are Like Casseroles.
My hat forwards or backwards when we recorded?
I don't know.
I turn it around a lot.
I wasn't looking at you very much today. I did love little skinny Josh today, though. Like the little skinny, like shrimp Josh.
But you weren't skinny shrimp Josh.
But you weren't a shrimp. You were actually very like lean and strong.
I was so lean and strong.
But that compared to like strong beefcake Josh with the tattoos, you're a totally different person.
Have I given people a tattoo tour?
Do you want to give people a tattoo? Okay, give people a tattoo tour.
These are new tattoos that I've gotten since in like the last month. So I got corn and an apple that was in New York at Babish's house from Chris Jong. Shout out to Chris Jong. And then later I got the infinity band of tomatoes. Shout out to Zlata. I'll link them in my Instagram stories. They do great work. And then I got the olives on a skewer. Because no man who ever planted an olive tree ever saw it bear fruit. So it's kind of like a metaphor for patience. And then the French phrase, dis-moi ce que tu manges, je te dirai ce que tu es, which is from Jean-Anthelme Brillat-Savarin's 1826 work, La Physiologie du Goût. It means, tell me what you eat and I'll tell you what you are. Thus is concluded Josh's tattoo tour. Thank you.
You forgot to talk about the leak?
Oh, and And then the leak, I got that from Zlata several years ago in Reno. And it's kind of like an homage to my dad who passed because I realized how much the idea of like physically breaking down vegetables and doing those repetitive tasks really calmed me down. Leaks are notoriously hard. And then a carrot that is representative of my wife, Julia, because we have a fun story about carrots from our first date. And that's it. And then I have a spork and then I have some lower back tattoos. But I'm probably going to get... oh, the dildo tattooed here didn't give it away? yeah, so that's it.
Well, let's get to our first opinion.
All right, Josh. All right, Nicole.
All right.
Hello, crew. You're one of my favorite podcasts out there.
Oh, yeah, thanks, man.
Celebration time is similar to these holidays, like Memorial Day or Juneteenth. Maybe even Thanksgiving or Christmas. But I say, why can't you have a Thanksgiving dinner every week or every month of the year?
Can I tell him what that is?
Now, to simplify it, I'm turning my Thanksgiving or Christmas holiday dinner into a casserole. What's the best order if you make a Christmas dinner into a extreme bean layer dip?
Yeah.
What's
the
best order?
This is interesting.
Chicken and dressing first, broccoli and cheese first, cranberry sauce on top or on bottom.
Hmm.
If you're going to layer every bit of your celebratory holiday dinner into a casserole, i.e. seven-layer bean dip, sans Thanksgiving, thank you, Nicole, what's the best layer? I still want to use chicken and stuffing on the bottom.
I got you.
I want to incorporate broccoli and cheese with a crunchy cracker top.
Shoot.
Where do I put the fruit layer in for the cranberry blueberry sauce? Where do I put the mashed potatoes in?
I got you.
How do I make a casserole dip that's holiday dinner inspired and make it work? Oh my gosh. I love you all forever.
Aww,
love you too, buddy. Tell them what the Jews do.
You know what we do? Every Friday, we have something called Shabbat. We all get together and we eat a big meal together and we talk about our week. We talk about our day. We talk about the news. We talk about our lives. We talk about our wins. We talk about our losses. And I do that there's 52 weeks in a year.
Yeah.
I do that almost 50 times. I do that. I literally have a big holiday dinner every Friday. And I talk to my family. and it's the best thing in the world, and I love it so much. This, aside from the religious aspect of it, it's just a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Having family dinner is good, and it feels, you know, sometimes you fight and sometimes you hate each other, but you know what? See you next Friday, because it keeps going on. Life keeps going on, and I always have my Fridays, and I'm very, very happy and blessed. And also, my work is so cool because they let me go home early on Fridays so I can prep for Shabbat. So thanks for doing that.
Hell yeah, man. Okay, let's get out of brass tacks. You're going to want to have the most absorbent layers on the bottom.
Stuffing.
Stuffing, right? You yes. want that bread on the bottom that's going to catch any juices.
Right.
I feel like you shouldn't have cranberry in there.
Oil the bottom, though. Oil the bottom.
Oil the bottom. I feel like—
Butter the bottom. Butter the bottom.
When he talked about the broccoli cheese with the crunchy cracker crust, I sort of
I want to eat that.
I want to eat that. Two, I want that to be on top.
I do not want that to be on top.
The crunchy cracker crust?
Wait, can I? You don't need to attach everything all together.
Sure,
there's space
sure,
sure.
But that sounds nice. I want the crunchy crackers to interact with the broccoli and the cheese.
Do you think this lovely friend of ours eats chicken or goose on Christmas?
I don't like either. Most people eat turkey.
What?
What? You think? Who's that? Nobody's roasting geese.
Have you ever, like...
Nobody's roasting geese.
Ever since I was a little girl, I remember Christmas dinners always included a goose.
That was, like, something you read in, like, a Charles Dickens novel.
Yes!
Yeah. No, we're way past Victorian London.
I really want to cook Americans a Christmas goose.
You can do that.
I'm cooking a Christmas goose for Shabbat.
I did that once. My brother and I have done, like, a five-spice duck.
I don't need to do all that. I'm just cooking a goose.
Yeah, cook okay. a goose. Cook a goose. Okay, so I don't know if I like goose.
What about geese?
The band?
What about moose? What about geese?
What? The band Geese? There's a bomb in my car!
I do know the band song? Geese. I do know the band Geese. Okay, shut up. Be serious for 5 seconds of your life.
Yeah, okay.
Stuffing.
Chicken gravy stuffing.
I would do the stuffing, and then I would mix the chicken with the gravy and the mashed potato, make that its own layer.
I don't like mixing gravy with mashed potatoes.
Okay, then we won't do that.
What I think...
Take it out. Take out the gravy.
Well, no, I think you mix the chicken with the gravy. Create a kind of like...
Why would you do that?
Because like that's where the chicken is going to be dry. It's left over.
It's mixed with the mashed potatoes that have the cream and the butter to help supplement any sort of dryness.
I feel like the chicken and gravy should be...
I don't want
to
cook a casserole
with interesting.
You. I don't like cooking with you. I like cooking side by side with you.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But cooking with you, I hate.
Yeah, I don't want anyone to touch my shit. Yeah.
I hate cooking, even like metaphorically.
Yeah.
I hate cooking with you.
It's crazy. I really, there is something where I don't like working creatively with other people.
Yeah.
I don't like, have you noticed that I've been over the course of 7 years, I hope, I don't like brainstorming with other people. I'm bad in brainstorms.
No, you're not. I think you're fantastic. Are you kidding me?
What?
I'm just laughing because we have one in an hour.
I disagree. I find you so insightful.
Really? Oh, I feel like I'm fighting against my own instincts because I don't like, I'm one of those people that I need to sit alone with my ideas, and if I'm bringing an idea to the table, mm-hmm. it has to be not only fully fleshed out, but, like, it has to be run through the ringer.
Interesting.
I'm not one of those, like, hey, bad idea, but I'm like, no, my idea is good. I stand by it. I'm willing to defend it. And if not, I'm keeping it inside. It's not good to do that. It comes from, I think, a place of deep iniquity. And also then—
Mother wound.
Mother wound. It's back. The edible complex.
Edible complex.
You know, but for real, it's like not good for other people because then you're not sort of being vulnerable with them and then they feel the need to keep their own ideas inside and you're going to goddamn brainstorm. The point is to get your ideas out there. So anyways, even when I'm cooking, I'm like, leave me alone. Let me build this casserole how I want to.
Okay, you build your casserole and then I'll tell you what I want to do with it.
Stuffing, gravy, chicken, mashed potatoes, broccoli, cheese, cracker topping on top, and then the cranberry goes on the side.
Ugh, I knew he was going to do the cranberry on the side.
Cranberry doesn't go in there.
Okay, false. So I'm going to do a layer of butter on the bottom just to make sure. Stuffing, I'm going to mix the chicken and the gravy and the mashed potato in a layer. And then I'm going to add the cranberry sauce on top of that. And then I'm going to take the broccoli cheese, put that on there, and then the cracker crust. And then I'm also going to put some French's fried onions on there too. And then that's all the foods that you said, right? It's similar.
I kind of want to make this broccoli, of course.
I made it. I love it.
I want to make this broccoli cheese casserole with Ritz crackers instead of
of green bean casserole with French's onions.
Okay.
I love green bean casserole with French's onions. I've done it from
scratch. Do it this Friday. Do it for Shabbat.
I can do it. Shabbat. What am I doing this Friday? No, I'm going to be in France.
Okay, so don't do it.
I'm not going to do it. We're gone too much. I want to start doing Shabbat. It sounds so nice.
You should.
But now we're assembling all of our family members. All of our family members live in Sherman Oaks now. We're all in the same neighborhood.
Hello.
Finally. I know. Shabbat's right there.
Dude, it doesn't even need to be a big extravaganza. You literally make, like tell everyone to bring a dish.
Yeah.
Just literally create community. Like, combine your lives together. Find out more about each other. Go deeper.
I know.
Deeper.
Go deeper, not wider.
Not wider, yeah.
Deeper, not wider.
Exactly.
I agree with that entirely.
That's what Shabbat's about.
Yeah.
Hi, Nicole and Josh.
Hi.
This is Jasmine from New York City.
Go
I've been
Knicks.
Listening to the backlog of the podcast and loving it.
Backlog.
I just want to share, I think the elite savory snack is a spoonful of nutritional yeast.
Oh,
I do
no.
It all the time. Yes, it turns your pee fluorescent yellow.
Oh,
but
no.
It's so good and umami. Honestly, I put it in everything, like salads. I like my favorite, like, struggle meal is basically just pasta butter with a crap ton of nutritional yeast.
I'm not mad at that.
And everyone should be eating spoonfuls of it. Okay, that's it. Love it. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the backlog.
Lot of things to discuss here. What's the deal with the pee?
I didn't know that it turns your pee fluorescent yellow.
Me neither. Can we Google this real quick? Because we might be discovering that you have like some sort of.
I think you might have a UTI.
Yeah.
The nutritional yeast might be giving you problems.
Yes. Because, it makes your pee almost neon yellow.
Tremendous.
Because there's a lot of vitamin B in it.
Vitamin B. I think sometimes I drink a ton of Monster Energies. My pee turns neon. So nutritional yeast is definitely better for you than Monster Energies. We can all agree with that.
There was a period of time where I was putting nutritional yeast on my popcorn every single time I would eat popcorn. And I loved it.
I don't keep it in the house, nutritional yeast at all. I never cook with it.
I've made
like vegan Caesar dressings with it.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's always been something where the flavor, it's umami, but it's deeper than just that like plain umami flavor. Like there's something kind of funky. It's got this
yeast.
It's got this like volatile nature to it. Sure.
Yeah.
But it's almost, I guess, like Vegemite. I mean, why?
Yes.
Yeah, rip some Vegemite. That's what it is.
It's the same thing.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess I'm getting that from like, I keep Parmesan in the house at all times. Pecorino better. And then fish sauce
it's
is the other thing.
It's a way to eat it. Yeah, I love fish
And then
sauce.
Even aside from that, just like I keep caldo de pollo, nor caldo de pollo in my house
just
at all times.
Put your finger in it and eat it.
Because Julia doesn't like when I use straight MSG. Even though I've explained, boy, have I mansplained the history of that to her so many times, but I use caldo de pollo instead. So I don't know. I've just never, maybe I'll buy nutritional yeast and start messing with it though. I'm curious if you're vegan or plant-based or just try to like reduce meat, because nutritional yeast was, I first heard about it from vegans in like college, who would talk about nooch.
I call it nooch, yeah. There was a period of time for like 6 months where I was obsessed with it, and then I stopped eating it. I should probably start again, but I don't like it in place of Parmesan cheese. I don't like it in place. It's its own ingredient. I don't like to use it as a substitute good because I'm not vegan. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That makes sense.
But I like it as its own thing.
What else are you putting it with?
Just popcorn.
Just popcorn.
It is olive oil, popcorn, nutritional yeast. That's all I need. And sometimes the neutral gets stuck to the bottom with the oil and I just put my finger and end up... So good.
I want to start eating more Vegemite and butter toast.
Oh my gosh, that was my pregnancy craving. Oh my God, I miss it. I used to just like lick. We had Vegemite here, and I would just like take a little bit, and I would just lick it on a spoon.
So much better than Marmite.
Oh my God, it was so good. I miss it right now. I'm gonna go have some right now. My mouth is, I'm salivating at the thought of eating Vegemite. Okay, do we have more opinions?
Yeah, one more.
One more.
Hi, Josh and Nicole.
Hi.
My name is Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
Hey, Kel.
And I just listened to the opinion about the guy that likes sour cream with his iceberg lettuce. And I just want to tell you what I like sour cream with.
Okay.
And that is a brownie. All right. Have a great day. Bye.
I love whenever we have geniuses on this part of the pod.
It's pretty damn good. It's pretty damn good.
I love the idea of sour cream on a brownie. Ugh.
Here's the thing.
Yum.
I was about to say, if you just put sour cream on a chocolate cake, I don't think it's as successful.
Mm.
But there's something about, like, you ever have, like, a brownie that has, like, a fudge icing on it, and you're like, this is kind of too much.
I don't need the fudge. I never need the fudge in a fudge icing.
Brownies are already so rich.
Yeah,
that, like, that's the point. But little sour cream kind of cuts it.
Oh.
Sounds pretty nice.
Honey. Honey.
Yeah, a little honey on top of that too.
Oh no, I don't want honey. Okay. I'm just saying honey like as a term.
Oh, gotcha.
Of, like,
okay, yeah. Sure.
Wow, I have a feeling that I did this whenever I was working at that chocolate store.
You think you invented this? You're taking credit
for...
No.
I think I've tasted this before. I've tasted this combination before, and let me tell you, it is dreamy.
I wonder if the texture would be an issue with, like, brownie is kind of chewy.
It has to be a dark chocolate brownie. It can't be like a milk chocolate. Like,
I'm like salivating. My mouth is watering thinking about ice cold sour cream.
It's like waterfalls.
Like a room temp brownie. Hot damn! How do we make this happen? Do we got brownies in the...
I can make a call.
You guys want to know something fun about Last Meals? If anybody requests a brownie, we just use box.
Yeah, what do you
box.
Mean?
We use the do you use Ghirardelli? I think the Ghirardelli.
Ghirardelli? It's not Ghirardelli?
Isn't it Ghirardelli?
My whole life I've been saying Ghirardelli Square.
Ghirardelli. Well, I've been saying Ghirardelli. I don't know.
Ugh, you also say channel.
Channel. Ghirardelli.
Ghirardelli.
I've been saying Ghirardelli?
That's okay. It's a little quirk. You got a little quirk.
Anyways, we use Ghirardelli box mix.
I have a really good brownie recipe if you want it.
Yeah?
It's actually freaking, it's incredible.
I don't think you can beat Ghirardelli. Okay. Just like, I don't think anybody can make a better marinara sauce than Rao's.
Yeah.
Some people buy nice watches. Some people buy fancy cars. Not me. I'm spending all my money on Rao's yard sauce. It's $9.
You know there was a Rao's here? I believe they are permanently closed now.
No way.
Have you ever been?
I never went to the one here.
It wasn't cool enough.
Yeah.
Hard to get a res.
Yeah.
If only I had someone who I was friends with that had clout that could help me get reservations to cool places.
Nima? All right, on that note, thank you so much.
About you, guy.
Thank you so much for stopping by Hot Dog and the Sandwich. We got new episodes for you every Wednesday out wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to be featured on Opinions Like Casseroles, hit us up at 833-DOG-POD-1.
Like the video.
Oh, yeah. Logan's telling me to tell you to like the video.
I would also tell you to like... because it really helps us.
No, don't only like just like it, like physically. Show us that you like it by liking it.
YouTube gives us $1 for every like that we get.
Is that true?
Yeah. It's a new program. It's called Dollar for Likes.
Like Jump Rope for Heart?
Just like Jump Rope for Heart. It's not true. I was lying to you. I've never heard of Jump Rope for Heart.
I hate when you lie to me so well.
What is Jump Rope for Heart?
I don't know. I don't want to talk about it anymore because you lied so good.
See y'all next time.
Lie worse next time.